That lines Iran's leader calls for a lasting ceasefire in Yemen and advises Saudi rulers not to continue a war they are not going to win. Russia's Putin says the most important conclusion from the Ukraine war is that the unipolar world order built by the United States is falling apart. And also, the Biden administration preparing a new arms package worth $750 million for Ukraine as early as next week. Hello and welcome, everybody. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Saudi Arabia does not have a chance of winning its war on Yemen, urging the kingdom to stop its aggression there. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, with the efforts of the Yemeni people and the courage of their leaders, a Saudi victory is impossible. He called on Saudi officials to find a way out of this war. Iran's leader expressed support for negotiations and a lasting ceasefire in Yemen and praised the patience of the people of that country. Yemen has been devastated by war-ravaged Saudi Arabia and some of its Arab allies in March 2015. According to the UN, more than 300,000 Yemenis have been killed through direct or indirect causes such as hunger. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC, renews revenge calls for the U.S. assassination of top Iranian commander and anti-terror figure, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Commander of the IRGC Ground Force, Brigadier General Mohammad Pakpour, says Iran has taken a series of powerful and devastating retaliatory measures against the U.S. and Israel. He said those measures are in addition to Iranian missile attacks that hit a U.S. airbase in Iraq on January 8, 2020, 5 days after Soleimani was killed. Pakpour added that even if all American leaders are killed, it will not be enough to avenge General Soleimani's death. The IRGC commander also hailed Iran's deterrence capabilities, saying the country is ready to repel foreign threats. He stressed that Iran's enemies no longer have the strength to take any action against the Islamic Republic. Afghans have condemned a recent stabbing attack at Imam Reza Shrine in Iran's northeastern city of Mashhad, extending their sympathy and solidarity with the families of the victims and all Iranian people. Rahmatullah Baghban has filed this report for us from Kabul.
As a neighboring country, Iran has always been a second house for Afghans. Over 5 million Afghan refugees are living in Iran today. Following a stabbing attack at Imam Reza Shrine in Mashhad that left two clerics dead, the Afghan society condemned the move, extending messages of solidarity and sympathy with the Iranian people.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been a kind host to millions of Afghan refugees for more than four decades. Iran provides our Afghan legal and illegal refugees with jobs as well as educational, medical and other facilities. I wish Iranians enjoy peace and condemn any attack on their country as it has served as a second home for Afghan people.
I extend my deep condolences to the Iranian people over the barbaric attack on a number of clerics at Imam Reza Holy Shrine. Not only me, but also the whole Afghan nation were saddened after the attack. The enemies of Islam and the two nations are pushing conspiracies to sow sedition, but we won't let anyone to ruin our solidarity.
Afghans also echo Iran's voice against enemies' plots and Cold War. Experts say neither the knife attacker in Mashhad represents Afghans, nor allegations of Iran mistreating Afghan refugees are true. They believe enemies of the two nations are using the media to sow discord.
The Mashhad incident that left two clerics dead was orchestrated by Takfiri groups and the enemies of Iran and Afghanistan. We should be aware that how they are trying to target our friendship. The stabbing attacker never represents the Afghan people, but it was meant to push Afghanophobia in Iran. On the other hand, the West is sowing Iranophobia in Afghanistan by fake viral pictures, while we know that Iran is generously hosting Afghan refugees.
This comes as the two nations are expanding relations in different political, cultural, and economic areas. The two neighboring countries, Iran and Afghanistan, have long been close partners. People here thank Iran for peacefully housing millions of Afghan refugees. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The unipolar international order the U.S. has built after the Cold War is breaking up. That's according to the Russian president. Vladimir Putin believes the end of such order is the most important strategic conclusion from Russia's military operation in Ukraine. The Russian president made the comments at a meeting with his Belarusian counterpart on Tuesday. Putin said Russia will calmly continue its Ukraine operation until the goals are achieved. He called the situation in Ukraine a tragedy, but said Moscow had no other choice. Putin said Russia has to fight to prevent Ukraine from becoming a springboard for Moscow's enemies. He also called the anti-Russia sanctions imposed by the West as an economic blitzkrieg that has failed. And the U.S. president says he stands by his assertion that Russian troops are committing, quote, genocide in Ukraine. Joe Biden, however, says it'll be up to international lawyers to determine whether or not the Russian forces conduct in Ukraine qualifies as genocide. Biden had earlier called for President Putin to face trial over Russia's military operation in Ukraine. Kiev claims it has recovered the bodies of hundreds of civilians who were executed by Russian soldiers in the city of Bucha. The Kremlin dismisses the allegation as false, arguing that Ukraine has staged the videos of the bodies to pin the blame on Moscow and justify the anti-Russia sanctions. On this segment of the program, the U.S. is preparing to announce a new military aid package for Ukraine in its war with Russia, now in its 49th day. Reuters, citing American officials, says the package could be worth $750 million and will be announced as early as this week. It includes new capabilities such as unmanned surface vehicles and helicopters. The military aid is believed to be specifically aimed at helping Ukraine fight Russia in the eastern Donbass region. Ukraine and its western allies believe that Russia is preparing to take Donbass. The region includes the pro-Russian self-proclaimed republics of Luhansk and Donetsk. Last week, the White House said it has provided over $1.7 billion in military aid to Ukraine since the beginning of the war. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have John White, writer and political analyst, joining us from Edinburgh, and also Samuel Geddes, journalist, joining us from Melbourne. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. White in Edinburgh. How is the West's arms supply for Ukraine affecting this conflict, in your opinion? Is it prolonging the war? Is it helping boost Ukraine's defenses in a meaningful way? How do you see it?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's doing both of those things. The first and foremost, the priority for the West is clearly to prolong the war as long as possible in order to deplete Russian military forces in Ukraine. And Joe Biden and his counterpart in London, Boris Johnson, are willing to fight to the last drop of Ukrainian blood in order to do so. It's only prolonging the inevitable, however. The Russians are about to embark on its major offensive, which is major strategic objective throughout this conflict, which is to take the Donbass. And they've surrounded the bulk of Ukraine's armed forces there in the, around 40,000 men. And so that's going to be a major offensive. And once they bring their firepower to bear, no matter the cost, given the statements and the sentiments expressed by President Putin recently on the necessity for this conflict, then the Ukrainians will lose at huge cost. And the only strategy that Mr. Zelensky has at this juncture is to try and drag the West into direct military conflict with Russia. And I think this is a source of the claim of chemical weapons being used in Mariupol by Russian forces against the last holdouts of the Azov neo-Nazi battalion there.
Samuel, some NATO members fear that supplying Ukraine with heavier offensive arms could lead to direct confrontation with Russia. Do you see it in that light as well? Are those fears justified?
Well, I think they certainly are justified if Russia were to end up targeting those arms transfers, which would obviously involve the risk of killing citizens of NATO member countries, then yes, that would be an extremely dangerous escalation. As well as echoing what John said about the principally the United States wanting to prolong the conflict, obviously for geopolitical reasons in terms of weakening Russia and bleeding it dry, I would say that in general, the war seems as though in the immediate and medium term it will be enormously economically lucrative for the United States. Not only has it really reshaped the energy system in the US's favor, as it will now be supplying a large share of Europe's energy needs into the future, but it has more or less effectively cornered the global agricultural, petrochemical, fertilizer, and of course arms industries that both Russia and Ukraine were key players in before the war, and from now on it seems will very likely not be. So that means an enormously enlarged market share for key US industries. So I think, I mean, I can't say that I have direct evidence of that, but it would seem that that may well be a motivating factor in the US willingness to, as John said, fight Russia down to the last Ukrainian.
Back to our guest, John White. Ukraine has been complaining about Western arms not coming in quick enough, and the U.S. has said that the Ukraine, Kiev, will need months of training in order to operate some of the weapon systems. Why do you think the U.S. is moving slowly in providing this heavier artillery?
Well, it's not an easy thing to do logistically. There's also various checks and balances that have to be met. There's a system of process that has to be signed off by various departments. They are funneling weapons in though at quite an impressive speed, or have been. And I think the ante will be up with the start of this major Russian offensive in the Donbass. Boris Johnson, when he was in Kiev recently to visit Mr. Zelensky, promised 120 British armoured vehicles, and that's going to involve Ukrainian forces who are going to be operating those vehicles, travelling to the UK to learn how to operate them. Some of this equipment is very technically advanced and needs some training, and up to a few months training. So it's interesting to see how the American, in terms of their intelligence, believe this war is going to go. They obviously think they're in for a long war in the Donbass, and they will have time to train up the various Ukrainian servicemen and people who are going to be operating the equipment that they are intent on supplying. I don't know where the American intelligence get their sources from. I think there's been a lot of misinformation coming from the West about the supposed failure of this Russian offensive or Russian military operation or campaign. I don't think Russia ever intended, for example, to take Kiev as stated. I think the objective there was to pin down Ukrainian forces in and around Kiev so that they could not reinforce the bulk of the Ukrainian army deployed in the Donbass as the Russians set about systematically encircling it. They've now done that, and as I said, they're ready to embark on a huge military offensive. But one of the major issues, and my interlocutor there was very eloquent in establishing the economic impulse and the fact that America now enjoys geopolitical dominance over Europe in a way it has not for some years, is the NATO factor. We heard only a few months ago, Emmanuel Macron was talking up the idea of a European Union separate, independent military force. That's going to be blown into the water after this. NATO has now come back to the fore, and this will cement NATO's status within Western military and security apparatus as the tip of the spear of Western hegemony.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Writer and political analyst John White joining us from Edinburgh. And thanks to journalist Samuel Geddes joining us from Melbourne. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Italy's economy, already tested by 2 years of anti-pandemic measures, is further suffering from sanctions imposed on Moscow by the members of the European Union following the war in Ukraine. Inflation in Italy continues to grow as authorities fear serious repercussions on the country's society. Max Julie reports from Rome.
1.5 months into the Ukraine war, and the effects of the conflict are starting to bite hard into Italy's economy, 2 years of anti-COVID measures and a series of sanctions adopted against Russia, the largest and most severe restrictive penalties ever adopted by the European Union, have piled pressure on Italy, which is among the countries relying the most on raw materials from Moscow. Russia's natural gas accounts for about 40% of Italy's total gas supply. Due to soaring energy prices, Italy's inflation surged to 7% in March, the highest rate ever recorded in 3 decades.
L'inflazione è preoccupante.
The current inflation rate in Italy is worrying, as it can seriously affect families. At this stage, it's impossible to make any prediction. However, if things remain this way, the country may well slip into recession in the coming future. It's the globalization itself that has been greatly put to the test by the 2008 financial crisis, the pandemic, and now the Ukraine war.
The Bank of Italy has recently warned that the country's annual inflation rate would rise to over 8% this year if the Mario Draghi government opts to enact a complete halt in gas supplies to Italy from Russia. Meanwhile, Rome has slashed its growth estimate for this year, forecasting the country's gross domestic product to grow by 3.1%, down from a 4.7% projection made last September. During a ceremony for the 170th anniversary of the state police force, the Italian Interior Minister Luciana Lamorgese warned that the nefarious effects of the war in Ukraine risk creating major social problems in Italy. Problems, the minister noted, that must be urgently addressed.
The situation of uncertainty on the economic and social front that the war opened, in part due to the effect on the energy market and the supply of raw materials, could have a major impact on industrial production, economic growth, employment levels, and therefore on the country's social moorings.
Thousands of small and medium firms have already been forced to shut down or reduce their activities across the country. Max Civili, Rome.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran is associated with many things. If you are into geology, that would be oil oozing out of the land. Iran is among the world's top five in oil reserves. But oil or petroleum is not the only mineral resource that makes the country rich. Copper is among its other riches, as are lead and zinc.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you didn't know, Iran has over 220 million tons of proven zinc and lead ore reserves. That is significant. But in copper, it has stood among the top 10. What is being done about all that treasure? It can't all stay underground forever. And there are those extracting and producing the minerals. To meet some of them, we made a trek to Zadin Industrial and Mining Group.
In 2009, Iran produced 383,000 tons of copper, meaning it had the world's ninth largest reserves of copper at 32.5 million tons. As a matter of fact, the mines at Sarcheshme in Kerman province contain the world's second largest load of copper ore, that is 5% of the world's total in 2009. Iran is one of the most important mineral producers in the world, ranking among 15 major mineral-rich countries. It was estimated to hold some 68 types of minerals, 37 billion tons of proven reserves, and more than 57 billion tons of potential reserves worth $770 billion in 2014.
That is not to say mining in Iran has no more work to be done on it. It is still under development, but there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more are waiting for further opportunity to arise for their turn at investment. Zadin Group has already arrived at a point to claim we have done what we could.
Flotation, or in other words, ore dressing in mineral processing, is a main process of production. It is a method used to separate and concentrate ores by altering their surfaces to a hydrophobic or hydrophilic condition. These chemical and physical changes to the surface of minerals are made using materials with different properties, including activators.
Now, in working with minerals, the production process is most efficiently carried out in stages. And what a company just cannot do without is its laboratory for pilot tests before going head in with its whole stock. It is literally to avoid the proverbial haste that makes waste.
An asset to corporations is their R&D departments. The reason is they perform research for technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones, hence elevating the company's industrial standing.
The corporation's labor paid off. Zadin has registered or patented 26 inventions, five of which are already industrialized and are being used in the production line. Indeed, standard is everything, especially for foreign trade. And Iran's production by far outweighing its domestic use, there is plenty of room for mineral exports from this country. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact.
Only 80 to 100,000 tons of produced zinc ingots and 50 to 80,000 tons of lead ingots are consumed domestically. And the remaining were exported to target markets in Asia and Europe, going by 2014 and 2015 estimates. The National Iranian Copper Industries Company is one of the largest companies listed on the Tehran Stock Exchange. It was the largest non-oil exporter in Iran in 2010, with exports worth $1.3 billion. Considered to be the biggest sector in the world in terms of dollar value, the oil and gas sector is a global powerhouse. It uses hundreds of thousands of workers worldwide and generates hundreds of billions of dollars globally each year. The largest volume of products coming out of the oil and gas industry are fuel oil and gasoline. Oil has been used as fuel for transport to generate electricity that lights homes and run factories and machines. And petroleum is the primary material for numerous chemical products, including pharmaceuticals, fertilizers, solvents, and of course, plastics. Our lives would be very different without oil. This time, we're going to explore technology and engineering related to the oil and gas industry. We wanted to see who the major players in this field are and why their services are so complex and unique. Our journey took us to a knowledge-based engineering company called Farazan Saze Darya, which began its work over a decade ago. Its main activity is to design and build structures related to oil and gas extraction and transfer. It has a broad scope of engineering services. The things it designs encompass onshore and offshore oil platforms, storage tankers, distribution pipelines, and other structures and buildings related to the oil and gas industry. Just like the structure or facility, oil infrastructure is also susceptible to earthquake damage, particularly in southern Iran, where tremors are more common. This firm was among the first engineering companies to implement the new government standards for earthquake-proofing oil platforms and rigs both in and off land. This company has a long portfolio of projects it has engineered over the years. One such project was to create oil tankers and pumps for the strategic Jask oil project. This is a project that transfers oil through a 1,000-kilometer pipeline along the southern coast to the Jask oil terminal. It is predicted that after completion, this project will have the capacity to transfer up to 1 million barrels of crude per day. However, that's only one of the projects that this company has completed, and there are dozens more. Previously, such services were imported into the country. This means that when a new oil platform was needed or an old one needed maintenance, industry participants had to employ foreign companies to come to Iran and get the job done. Among other complications, this process was expensive and created a dependency on foreign services. One of the major advantages of this company is it has localized this specialized engineering service in the country. Indigenizing and employing domestic know-how in the oil industry has helped the country save millions over the years. This company has developed such that now it exports its engineering services. It also collaborates with foreign firms to build and design structures. This firm has created hundreds of employment opportunities, particularly in specialized field of engineering in the gas and oil sector. It has also indirectly generated numerous jobs through subcontractors and construction execution. It is no surprise that this knowledge-based firm has gathered some of the most experienced experts in the industry at its facilities. Among its many activities, it also cooperates with numerous universities and academic institutions. Such steps are necessary for this company to stay up to date. Plus, it incorporates and applies cutting-edge technology in the design and implementation of its projects. This company adheres to strict international standards for designing and building its structures. With years of experience and numerous foreign contracts under its belt, this company has been able to expand its know-how for executing projects with the highest quality. Here's a fun fact you might not have known.
With rich oil reserves, Iran is one of the founding members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, also known as OPEC. Based on figures from OPEC, the country is the fourth largest oil producer among its members. Plus, Iran possesses the third largest oil reserves in the world.
Iran's oil sector will be the first to benefit from the removal of sanctions. Foreign companies remain interested in this market as they anticipate its largest potential. But the road to Iran's market has been obstructed by U.S.-imposed sanctions. Based on figures from OPEC, nearly 80% of the world's proven oil reserves belong to member countries. The majority of these reserves are located in West Asia, amounting to some 64% of the OPEC total. Iran has over 156 billion barrels of proven oil reserves as of 2019, which is roughly 9% of the world's share. Going off of OPEC statistics, Iran produced nearly 3,000 barrels of oil per day on June 2021. Production figures would be much higher if it were not for sanctions imposed on Iran by Washington. Iran's oil industry has faced heavy sanctions since former U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018. According to the Ministry of Oil, the average daily production of oil before the reimposed sanctions was over 3 million barrels per day. The government has plans to surpass the pre-sanctions production levels to over 4 billion barrels per day. That's, of course, under the stipulation that the sanctions against oil companies and exports are removed.
As you might know, Iran's oil industry is a major engine behind the country's economic growth. Oil exports generate millions in foreign revenue, but the country also uses this valuable resource in other industries to make various products. Petroleum and petrochemical products, such as plastics, are also derived from oil and natural gas, and Iran makes a large amount of both.
Figures from the Iranian National Plastic and Polymer Industrial Association show that Iran can potentially export $5 billion worth of petchem products. Currently, over 6 million tons of polymer products are domestically produced every year. Another derivative of crude oil is gasoline, and Iran completely supplies its domestic needs with its daily productions. In the past year, due to reduced internal usage, much of the surplus was exported to international markets. Based on the National Iranian Oil Products Distribution Company, last year nearly 700,000 barrels of gasoline fuel were produced each day. Data from this company shows that Iran has managed to boost its gasoline exports despite sanctions. Over $1 billion worth of gasoline was exported in the first half of last year alone. That's higher than the year 2020, when Iran exported nearly $500 million worth of this commodity. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Look, I don't want to scare you off, but right now, millions of them are right on your skin, in your mouth, on your teeth, in your gut. They're everywhere. They can control your mind and they can control your mood. You heard me right. I'm talking about bacteria. And as terrifying as that might sound, because, you know, naturally you would think of these microorganisms as harmful little things that cause disease, you shouldn't really panic. You're fine. In fact, there are a lot more good bacteria in our body than bad bacteria.
Bacteria have got a bad reputation, and for good reason. Bacteria can cause pneumonia, meningitis, food poisoning, and a variety of other infections and diseases. These bad bacteria are the reason why we diligently disinfect our hands and wipe down places where germs tend to congregate, and we have not stopped there. To kill these bad microorganisms, we have developed a wide range of antibiotics. But this is not the whole picture. Our bodies are also home to an estimated 100 trillion good bacteria. They are essential to our survival and live in complete harmony with us humans.
It's a symbiotic relationship in which we both benefit, us humans and them good bacteria. It's called mutualism. Think of bees and flowers.
Thank you.
Bees fly from flower to drink the sugary sweet nectar that is made by flowers. While drinking the nectar, bees get some pollen on their hairy bodies, and when they land on the next flower, some of the pollen will rub off their body and pollinate the plant. In this mutualistic relationship, the bees get to eat and the flowering plants get to reproduce. Similarly enough, we help good bacteria eat and thrive, and they in turn help our bodies digest food and absorb nutrients. They are also effective in preventing and treating conditions like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and inflammations associated with autoimmune diseases.
The bacteria that I'm going to be talking about in this week's feature program are primarily present in our digestive system and in some foods and supplements. You've probably heard their name, probiotics. In order to learn how these probiotic supplements and products are made right here in Iran, I'm visiting a pharmaceutical company called Zistakhmi. Here's more.
Actually, I should go back to around 20 years back when we started to think about probiotics in Iran. At that time, probiotic was a really very low profile subject in Iran. Nobody or a few people, even the physicians, did know about the benefits of probiotics. We started working in the University of Tehran, working as a thesis of students, and after a few years we established this company, Zistakhmi, in the incubator center of College of Pharmacy. And after 5 years, we could manage to establish this prestigious building and production facility outside in the outskirts of Tehran.
The storage room houses a wide variety of raw materials that are used in the manufacturing process. There are various aisles and many shelves here. There's also a map locating everything. But the effective material, microbes, are not and cannot be kept in any ordinary storage room. Certain probiotic strains are stored at extremely low temperatures and in special freezers to avoid any kind of contamination. These microbial strains are then grown. This is called fermentation. At the end of this process, a broth is made which contains a large number of probiotic organisms. Because this broth is in dilute form, it should be concentrated. That's when centrifugation comes into play and turns the broth into a cream-like substance. The paste is then spray-dried.
After the spray-drying phase, probiotic is transformed into a dry powder and is sent to a clean room. Clean rooms are controlled environments that are packed with industry-standard equipment to ensure that the herb-borne pollutants are kept at extremely low levels. Clean rooms must have, you know, consistent humidity, temperature, and pressure conditions. Special ventilating systems and air conditioning systems are used to guarantee this. Also, architectural designs in a clean room must be smooth and easy to clean and also have minimal ledges and joints.
The production of probiotics is a complex procedure and requires extensive skill and experience. Quality control is essential throughout the whole production process, from raw materials to the final product. Zistakhmi is equipped with different laboratories and control rooms to ensure each stage in the production process is systematically controlled, high standards are met, and objectives are pursued.
At the moment, hopefully, Iran is very advanced in terms of probiotic products. I think that at the moment we have around 10 companies which are producing probiotics, and of course, because we have been the first company, we have a main market share in comparing to other competitors in this field. So the probiotic industry in Iran is deeply rooted, and we don't need to import any products or intermediate anything from the outside.
The development of formulations requires extensive research on the best combination of strains. This is an ongoing process that keeps evolving by the day. Various research teams are at work to find new and more effective combinations. Depending on the indication, different probiotic strains are chosen and tested on their compatibility. In addition to the API, active pharmaceutical ingredients, research teams consider including other ingredients in the formulation, namely prebiotics, which are a type of fiber that human body cannot digest but serves as food for probiotics. Back to the clean room.
Well, based on the formula, different probiotic powders are blended together to form an evenly distributed and balanced mixture. Besides probiotics, other ingredients, essential ones, are also mixed, including flavoring material or binders or prebiotics. This blend then gets ready to be presented into its final dosage form, like tablets, capsules, and sachets.
This is the room where powders are pressed into tablets, the capsule filling machine, and the sachet packing machine. Probiotics have a wide range of applications. Here at Ziz Tahmir, the probiotic products come in a variety of forms, benefiting different age groups and genders. Oral drops and sachets for infants and children, capsules and tablets for adults and the elderly, and vaginal capsules for women. Thus, by producing them inside Iran, the country can save a lot of money. And with that, I want to conclude my report of yet another company located in Pardis Technology Park.
It's time now to leave a little room for a media review. Tehran Times of April 2022 quotes Iran's Minister of Industry, Mining and Trade telling of plans for growth in the country's mining and trade.
Reza Fatemi Amin said, according to the plan, we are looking to achieve 12.5% growth in the industry sector and 10% growth in the mining and trade sectors in the current Iranian calendar year 1401. In late March, the minister had announced that the regional planning for the industry and trade sectors of the country is prepared by his ministry in accordance with the capacities of each province and to prevent the concentration of industrial units in one region.
Acknowledging the importance of outing raw materials into products, the mining and trade minister had said a month earlier that industry, mining, trade ministry supports knowledge-based products.
The minister's statement was in line with the slogan of the present Iranian calendar year 1401, which is named by the leader of Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as production, knowledge-based, and job-creating. The ministry's plans for the realization of the present year's slogan will be in three levels. Fatemiye Amin said, in the first level, we rank, prioritize, target, and determine indicators, and we monitor. For example, in the export field, we will base the ranking of exporters on knowledge-based factors. That is, exporters who export knowledge-based products will receive higher rankings and points and will be more supported. He also added, industries that move toward production of knowledge-based products or industries that create more jobs are also supported by the ministry. The second level is dedicated to projects that need to be defined in this area.
And that wraps up our program for today. Let's hear what you have to say about this industry. Stay tuned next week for another edition of Bozor.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatihul Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So we were talking about how we are able to have that financial sustainability and the importance of us doing something and not being lazy and all these other things. And then I said that there were these recommendations of how we need to be independent. There are types of people that Allah will not answer their prayer. And one of them is وَرَجُلٌ يَقْعُدُ فِي بَيْتِهِ, a man who's sitting at home. وَيَقُولُ يَا رَبِّ ارْزُقْنِي, oh Allah, grant me rizq. وَلَا يَخْرُجْ وَلَا يَطْلُبِ الرِّزْقِ, he doesn't leave the house and he's not even pursuing any kind of rizq. You're not working, you're not doing anything about planning for your future, about planning for your life, about planning for an income or anything else. And on top of that, you're asking God to give you rizq. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying, yes, barakah is from me, but you need to be doing something. You need to be moving. You need to be having plans. You know, sitting down at home on the couch isn't going to get you anywhere. This hadith is also very important for these people who think that, well, you know, it's better off for you to do ibadah and not go off and do your work and not pursue money. That's a very wrong attitude. Very misleading as well. Someone was talking to them about an individual, it's to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, about an individual by the name of Umar ibn Muslim. And then Imam Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, he says, so what is it that Umar ibn Muslim did? They said to him, you know, they were complaining to him about Umar ibn Muslim. I said, what is it that he did? Then they said, جُعِلْتُ فِدَاك, may we be sacrificed for you. أَقْبَلَ عَلَى الْعِبَادَ, he was only going after worshipping, ibadah. وَتَرَكَ الْتِجَارَ, and he left any kind of pursuing of income or business or anything like that. فَقَالْ وَيْحَهُ, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, woe be upon him. أَمَا عَلِمَ, does he not know? أن تارك الطلب لا يستجاب له, that a person who abandons and leaves the pursuing of money and wealth, their dua will not be answered. And there's many of these other ahadith that speak exactly the same way of how important it is for you to pursue, for you to gain money, for you to go after it. وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا وَيَرْزُقُهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ. That's a beautiful ayah. Please look into this ayah, which is in Surah Al-Talaq, verse number 2 and 3. We understand from all of these things that when it comes to how we need to preserve ourselves by doing work, by having plans, and the reward that you will get, as we've mentioned before, here you will also be seen as a mujahid fi sabilillah, al-kad ala iyalih, someone who's struggling for the sake of generating an income for their family. Kal mujahid fi sabilillah is like a mujahid on the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So you're going to be sitting down at home doing absolutely nothing? No, even your dua, even your ibadah in that particular sense won't be accepted. Oh.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatih al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
There are many lessons.
Of the book
by those prophets, and
eat, take some in your hand, and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Let me read this last hadith. It's a very, very interesting hadith. Someone by the name of Muhammad ibn Munkadir says, one day he saw one of the great personalities of Quraysh. This was in reference to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. And he saw Imam Muhammad al-Baqir at that old age, going after income and working and things like that. And then he said, "Aslahak Allah ya Shaykh min shuyukh Quraysh." May Allah fix you, may Allah correct you, may Allah guide you, O Shaykh from among the Shaykhs of min ashyahi Quraysh, from among the Shaykhs of Quraysh. "Ara'ayta law ja'a ajaluka wa anta 'ala hadhihi al-hal, ma kunta tasna?" What happens if your time comes for you to die and you're in this particular state working? So this person is trying to say to Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi, maybe he didn't know him, but he's saying to Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi that you're an old man, you know, you shouldn't be pursuing dunya this much, you know, rest, you know, don't worry about this worldly material gains to that extent. "Ara'ayta law ja'a ajaluka," if you realize that your ajal, your fate, your destiny of departing this world, of death comes, and you are in this particular state, you're in this particular situation, "ma kunta tasna," what would you do? What are you going to do? Faqal, Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi, he says, "law ja'ani al-maut," if death came to me, "وَأَنَا عَلَى هَذِهِ الْحَالِ," and I am in this state and this situation of course, working and pursuing an income. "وَأَنَا عَلَى هَذِهِ الْحَالِ جَاءَنِي وَأَنَا فِي طَاعَةِ اللَّهِ," that means that death would come to me while me being in the state of obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. "جَاءَنِي وَأَنَا فِي طَاعَةِ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلْ أَكُفُّ بِهَا نَفْسِي," where I, by this, what I am doing in pursuing income is I'm preserving myself, I'm protecting myself, I'm safeguarding myself, and also my family, وَعِيَالِي عَنْكَ وَعَنِ النَّاسِ, I'm making sure that I am preserved and safeguarded and protected, myself and my family, from you and from the likes of you. The hadith continues on with that. The next topic is a very, very important topic, a very interesting topic, and that is on the topic of how are we able to gain a halal income and the dangers of a haram income. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahireen.
Driving past, walking fast,
to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.